ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, chapter entitled Karma Yoga, text number 14. Annat bhavanti bhutani parjanyad anna sambhava yajnyad bhavati parjanyo yajnya karma samudbhavaha. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: all living bodies subsist on food grains which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by performance of yajna, and yajna is born of prescribed duties. Purport: Srila Baldev Vidya Bhushan, a great commentator on the Bhagavad Gita, writes as follows: Ye Indrad Angata Ya Vasistam Yajyam Sarveshwaram Vishnum Abhyarcha Tachesham Ashnanti Tenatad Deha Yatram Sampadayanti Te Santa Sarveshwarasya Yajna Purushasya Bhakta Sarva Kilbishair Anadi Kala Vivriddair Atmanu Bhava Pratibandakair Nikilai Papair Vimuchyante. The Supreme Lord, who is known as the Yajna Purusha, or the personal beneficiary of all sacrifices, is the master of all the demigods, who serve him as the different limbs of the body serve the whole. Demigods like Indra, Chandra and Varuna are appointed officers who manage material affairs, and the Vedas direct sacrifices to satisfy these demigods so that they may be pleased to supply air, light and water sufficiently to produce food grains. When Lord Krishna is worshipped, the demigods, who are different limbs of the Lord, are also automatically worshipped. Therefore, there is no separate need to worship the demigods. For this reason, the devotees of the Lord, who are in Krishna consciousness, offer food to Krishna and then eat, a process which nourishes the body spiritually. By such action, not only are past sinful reactions in the body vanquished, but the body becomes immunized to all contamination of material nature. When there is an epidemic disease, an antiseptic vaccine protects a person from the attack of such an epidemic. Similarly, food offered to Lord Vishnu and then taken by us makes us sufficiently resistant to material affection. And one who is accustomed to this practice is called a devotee of the Lord. Therefore, a person in Krishna consciousness who eats only food offered to Krishna can counteract all reactions of past material infections, which are impediments to the progress of self-realization. On the other hand, one who does not do so continues to increase the volume of sinful action, and this prepares the next body to resemble hogs and dogs, to suffer the resultant reactions of all sins. The material world is full of contaminations, and one who is immunized by accepting prasadam of the Lord, food offered to Vishnu, is saved from the attack. Whereas, one who does not do so becomes subjected to contamination. Food grains or vegetables are factually eatables. The human being eats different kinds of food grains, vegetables, fruits, etc. And the animals eat the refuse of the food grains and vegetables, grass, plants, etc. Human beings who are accustomed to eating meat and flesh must also depend on the production of vegetation in order to eat the animals. Therefore, ultimately, we have to depend on the production of the field and not on the production of big factories. The field production is due to sufficient rain from the sky, and such rains are controlled by demigods like Indra, Sun, Moon, etc. And they are all servants of the Lord. The Lord can be satisfied by sacrifices. Therefore, one who cannot perform them will find himself in scarcity. That is the law of nature. Yajna, specifically the Sankirtan Yajna prescribed for this age, must therefore be performed to save us at least from scarcity of food supply. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadatisva Padantikam. Stand. So, welcome all the devotees for the evening Bhagavad Gita class. So today we are reading from chapter 3 and we are supposed to cover text number 14, 15 and 16. So I thought of having a brief recap of all the previous verses from this chapter. Then we'll come to the verse which is actually of today's subject. So in the chapter 3, in the beginning of the chapter 3, Arjuna asks actually two questions. So in the chapter 2, Lord Krishna gave different paths for attaining perfection. He talked about karma yoga, jnana yoga, etc. So Arjuna was a little bit confused about which path to take. For example, in the second chapter, in the 49th verse, Krishna said, Durena hyavaram karma buddhi yoga dhananjaya. Krishna said that keep all abominable activities far distant by buddhi yoga. So as you know, buddhi means intelligence. Buddhi yoga means with the help of the intelligence, one has to link with the Supreme Lord. So Arjuna thought like, Krishna is telling me to use the intelligence, and with the help of the intelligence, he's telling me to keep all the abominable activities by far distant. But at the same time, Krishna is also telling me to fight. So Arjuna becomes confused. Because Arjuna thought that my intelligence says that I should not engage in this horrible activity of fighting and killing so many people. That's what my intelligence says. So Krishna is telling me to use the intelligence, and also Krishna is telling me to fight. So what should I do? So Arjuna becomes confused. So as soon as he gets this doubt, so Arjuna immediately puts forward the question to Krishna. So we can understand that how one has to, whatever doubts one has in the path of spirituality, one has to actually put forward the doubts. Because these doubts are like, they are like internal demons. They can actually eat away a person from within. Like there was once a hunter went to a forest. He was actually killing one particular animal. So at that time, actually, it was forbidden to kill that particular animal. So whoever was going to kill that animal, they will be punished. So but then he was killing that animal. So the officer who is in charge of the inspection, he happened to come. So he actually half killed the animal, and then he put the animal inside his jacket in order to hide that from the officer. So then officer came, he started talking with him. was like, it was almost half an hour. So that particular bird, which he half killed, it slowly started eating his flesh from within. So by the time, after half an hour, the officer went. So by the time, that bird had eaten almost, eaten the entire flesh, and it had eaten the heart of the person. So when the officer went, he just fell down dead, because the animal had, the bird had eaten the flesh. So the lesson is, when we have certain doubts in the spiritual path, if we do not actually put forward that doubt to somebody, then that doubt will actually eat us from within, and because of that, one will not be able to progress in the spirituality. So one has to put forward the doubt. So here also Arjuna, as a sincere student, he is immediately presenting the doubt to Lord Krishna. So Arjuna asks in the first verse of this chapter, Jayasi chet karmanaste matha buddhir janardana tatkim karmani gore mam niyo jayasi keshava. So Arjuna is saying, O Janardhan, O Keshava, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruitive work? So Arjuna is immediately asking the question. It is interesting that Arjuna is addressing Lord Krishna by the word Keshava and Janardhan. So the word Keshava, one of the meaning of the word Keshava is one who controls Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. So Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. In fact, all the demigods, they are actually working under the direction of Lord Krishna. So if a person simply satisfies Krishna, then there is no need to separately worship the demigods, because Krishna controls even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Like Krishna says in the 10th chapter of the Gita, Name vidu suragana prabhavamcha maharshaya. Aham adirhi devana maharshinamcha sarvasha. Krishna says that even great demigods, Name vidu suragana, even great demigods cannot know my glories. And not only that, even great sages, they can also not know my glories. So once, we have this once, when Lord Shiva was worshipped by a particular demon called Vrikasur. So this demon, after he performed austerities to Lord Shiva, he asked a benediction that whomever I will, like if I put on my hand on somebody's head, that person should die immediately. So Lord Shiva granted that benediction. So immediately after that, he actually wanted to put his hand on Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva only gave the benediction, but then because he wanted to enjoy Parvati, so he actually wanted to first kill Lord Shiva and then enjoy Parvati. So Lord Shiva actually started running out of fear of Vrikasur. Then finally he took shelter of Lord Vishnu. And then Lord Vishnu came as a small boy, and then he told that Vrikasur that, like this Lord Shiva's benediction sometimes works, sometimes it doesn't work. Better you try out before actually trying to put your hand on Lord Shiva. First you can just put your hand on yourself, and then in that way you can try, like that is it. Because he was a small boy, then Lord Vishnu put him under illusion. So he put his hand on himself and then he died. So we can see that even Lord Shiva had to take help of Lord Vishnu when demons were trying to attack him. And there's another example that how Lord Krishna controls even Lord Brahma, or how Lord Krishna is superior to Lord Brahma. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Narada Muni asks questions to Lord Brahma, who is his brother, who is his father, Narada Muni asks him that it appears that I understand that you are the supreme creator of this whole material manifestation. It appears that you are the supreme Lord. But still, I have a doubt, because you yourself performed austerities in order to get the power to create, it appears that there is somebody superior to you. So please actually clarify, is there anybody who is superior to you? Like that he asks Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma immediately answers that, actually I am not the supreme, but Lord Krishna is the supreme. So we can see here that even Lord Krishna is even superior to Lord Brahma. Like in this way, in this world there are so many like so-called persons who claim to be God. They hardly have any power, but still they claim to be God. But here Lord Brahma, he has such a great power. He created the whole world. So if at all, if any person can cheat others as God, then Lord Brahma has the right to cheat others, because he at least has some power. But Lord Brahma honestly said, I am not the supreme. But there are so many Babas and Swamis, they claim to be Krishna or Jagannath, they claim to be Kalki avatar. They hardly have any power. They don't look beautiful, they look ugly, but still they claim to be God. So here, and then also, Arjuna also addresses Lord Krishna as Janardhan. So Janardhan means one who desires the ultimate benefit of all living entities. So Arjuna is saying that because you are Janardhan, you desire the benefit of all living entities, you desire the ultimate benefit of all living, please actually tell me clearly what is actually most beneficial. I am a little confused about this. So here we see that like in the material world, especially like in the cosmopolitan cities like Bombay, and especially in the Western world, like so many divorces take place. So many marriages end in divorce within 2 or 3 years after the marriage. But although so many divorces take place, but we very rarely hear of remarriage of the same persons. When two people get divorced, it is very rare that they will get remarried again. Because they never apply for it. So even if somebody applies, the other person will reject it. But in the case of Krishna, we see that all the living entities, we have all actually divorced Lord Krishna. We all rebelled against God. But still, Krishna is actually eager to remarry all the living entities. So that is why Krishna actually desires the ultimate benefit of all living entities. That is why he is known as Janardhan. There are so many people who may desire the benefit of you, but that is only temporary, only limited to this particular life or only few years. But Krishna desires the ultimate benefit of all living entities. So then in the second verse, Arjuna is saying that Vyamishreneva Vakyena Buddhim Moha Yashivame Tadekam Vada Nishitya Yena Shreyoham Apnuyam. My intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Therefore, please tell me decisively which will be most beneficial for me. Because Krishna described so many paths in the second chapter, for a common man to understand which is the actual path, it is a little difficult. Like for a common man to understand, you have to present in a little more organized way. Okay, so Krishna spoke from this verse to this one, this path is superior to that. So because Krishna spoke so many paths, so Arjuna presenting himself as a common man, because Arjuna was put under illusion by Krishna, he is actually telling that, I don't understand. Please actually tell me for clearly. I know that you are the Lord of everyone and you are my friend as well. So you would not actually bewilder me. Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai. But still, your instructions seem to bewilder me. I understand that it's actually because of my own fault in my intelligence. So please actually make one statement by which I can understand clearly what is the right path. So Arjuna, Then Arjuna says that, Arjuna quotes verses from the Vedic scriptures. He says that, I have heard that only by renunciation one can attain perfection. Only by taking sannyas one can attain perfection. Not by doing some activities or by wealth or progeny. So by that we cannot attain a perfection. That's what I have heard. So then immediately Krishna starts speaking. In the third verse, he says, Lokesmin vivida nishta pura prakta mayanaga jnana yogena sankhyanam karma yogena yoginam. So Krishna is saying that, O sinless Arjuna, I have already explained that there are two classes of men who try to realize the self, and some are inclined to understand it by empirical philosophical speculation and others by devotional service. Or some people approach through karma yoga and some people approach through jnana yoga. So here Krishna is addressing Arjuna by the word anaga. So this word anaga has two meanings. Anaga means sinless, and also it also has the meaning one who is spotless, one who is having a spotless intelligence. So in order to understand Bhagavad Gita, one has to be actually free from sin. Krishna, like, one has to have a pious attitude. That is why it is important to actually practice the regulative principles, or which are the no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, and no illicit sex. Because these four activities, they break the four pillars of religion, which are austerity, truthfulness, mercifulness, and cleanliness. So one has to be sinless to understand Bhagavad Gita. Like, there was one devotee who went for book distribution. So one person showed some eagerness. So the devotee started preaching to him. After 20 minutes, then he said that, I already have the Gita. So the devotee got frustrated. Yeah, like, I thought he showed some eagerness that he thought that he will take the book, but then he didn't take the book. But then next to him, some other person was reading the newspaper. Then he said, please give me the book, and then he gave the Lakshmi. So many people, some people may be staying very close to the temple, but they hardly actually visit the temple. They hardly take to Krishna consciousness. Because why? Unless one is sinless, unless one is pure, one cannot actually take to the process of Krishna consciousness. And it's not that one need not say that, okay, I'm committing sinful activity, so I will not take. So that is also not an excuse. So by taking to Krishna consciousness, even if we are sinful, we can be purified of the sins. So Krishna is saying that I have already described two types of steadiness. Krishna is using the word nishta. Two types of faith. One is karma yoga and another is jnana yoga. So these two types of people, they are based according to the purity or impurity of their consciousness. So the karma yoga is those who are impure in their heart, those who are having an impure heart, they should first perform prescribed duties and then get purified. And jnana yoga is meant for people who are already purified. Only they can actually stop doing their prescribed activities. So Krishna explained karma yoga or nishkama karma yoga in verses such as Karma Nyeva Adhikaraste, 2nd chapter, 47th verse. And Krishna explained Jnana Yoga in verses from 2nd chapter, 55th to 72nd verse. So one interesting point I want to tell is, Krishna is actually using the word Nishta, two types of faith, but actually this Nishta is used in the singular tense. So How is it relevant to us? So that means, it is used in the singular tense, that means, both types of path, whether it is karma yoga or jnana yoga, they have the same goal. So that is why it is used in the singular tense. So in other words, whether it is karma yoga or jnana yoga, they are all leading to the same goal. They are just like different rungs on the ladder. When you climb on a ladder, ultimately you reach the same destination. So different paths are, they are just different rungs on the ladder. Like some people, like there are different people from other religions, sometimes they become so fanatic, so they start attacking people from other religion. Like once, one person, like for example, one person asked a Muslim that how do you you are a Muslim, but then like what is your like attitude towards other religion, Hinduism, Christianity, etc. So this person said, ultimately all the religions teach a person to the same goal, to bring a person closer to God. Suppose if a dog will actually identify his master, whether the master comes in a coat and suit, or whether the master comes in dhoti kurta, or whether the master comes in some pajama kurta or someone. So similarly, if a person is a true follower of any bona fide religion, he will actually understand that all the religions actually talk about the same God. And he will know that all the living entities are there actually sons of God. So he will not actually commit violence against other people, oh, you are worshipping this God, he is not a bona fide God. So if somebody is a true follower of religion, he will not actually, he will not behave in a fanatic way by committing violence to other living entities. So if a person does not considers other religion to be bogus or something, then we are actually less than a dog. Because even a dog realizes his master, whether the master comes in any dress. So similarly, if we say that, okay, Allah is different, or Jesus is different, they are not bona fide religion, that means we are actually less than dog. Because Christianity and Muslims, they are also bona fide religions. As just like Sanatan Dharma. So then, Krishna is saying that, I previously told you that a person has to first purify the heart by doing his prescribed activities before renouncing the activities. Krishna says, I already told you in verse number 39 of the second chapter. So, but then still, since you are confused, still I'll again speak to you about the same subject matter. So from verse number 4 to 16, in 13 verses, Krishna is actually basically telling the point that a person who is having an impure heart, he should first perform his prescribed duties. He should not renounce his activities. First, he should perform his prescribed duties. So in the verse number 4, he says, Na karma naam anarambhan naishkarmyam purushoshnute nacha sanya sanadeva siddhim samadhi gachyate. Krishna is saying that without performance of prescribed duties, what will happen? You will not get freedom from reaction. Arjuna thought, by actually giving up activities, I will actually not get any reaction. Because if you perform action, you will get reaction. Okay, I will not perform any action, so then I will not get reaction. But Krishna is saying that without performance of prescribed duties, you will not get freedom from reaction. Not only that, you will not get perfection also. So then, one may ask the question, but what if an impure person renounces his activities? What will happen to such a person? So Krishna says immediately in the next verse, Nahi kaschik shanam api jatu tishtat yakarma krit. Krishna says, even if an impure person, if he actually renounces his activities, he will actually revert back to material activities again. Because such a person cannot remain inactive even for a moment. See, if an impure person renounces, he will again revert back to material action because he cannot remain inactive even for a moment. So Arjuna asks, so but then, if a person takes to sannyas, sannyasi does not perform any action. Sannyas is opposed to all activities. So how do you say that he will not remain inactive? So Krishna is saying, karyate hyavashak karma sarva prakriti jair gunai. He says, because every person has a particular nature, swabhava. So because of a particular nature, one gets certain desires and also sometimes one gets certain, a person becomes averse to certain activities. So because of one's nature. So because of that nature, so although a person may stop his activities, he will actually perform his action beyond his desire. Karyate hyavashak karma. That means he will be forced to do activity because he has a particular nature. Because of that, he will get some desire and aversion. So he cannot remain inactive. That's what Krishna is saying. So then Arjuna says, but we have seen that there are persons who have actually renounced their activities by not doing any activities. So they have closed their senses. They don't utilize their senses to perform any activities. So because of that, they are devoid of actions and attraction to repulsion also. So what about them? Then Krishna says, karmendriyani samyamya ya aste manasasmaran. Krishna says, a person may stop doing activities. He may stop doing his using his karmendriyas. Karmendriyas means what is in English? We have two kinds of senses. Acting senses and knowledge acquiring senses. So acting senses are this hands, legs, voice. These are the acting senses. The knowledge acquiring senses are our mind, our desires, etc. So a person may stop utilizing his acting senses. He may not speak, or he may not use his hands and legs to work, etc. But then his mind is always active. But then such a person, in his mind, he may think of certain sense objects. So he may externally renounce his activities, but within his mind he may be thinking about sense objects. So because of this impurity, because within the mind he is thinking of sense gratification, because of that he will not get perfection. So such a person is simply called a pretender or a mithyachar. So then Krishna says in the next verse, on the other hand, if a person, a detached householder is better than a pretending renunciant. On the other hand, a person may be married, but then he may be doing his activities in a detached manner. So he is actually better than a person who simply renounces his activities, but within his mind he is thinking of certain sense objects. So we have this story of Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya was one of the Vaishnava Acharya. So he was actually especially affectionate to one particular disciple who was a householder. His name was Dhanurdas. So Ramanujacharya also had many sannyasi disciples. So these sannyasi disciples became envious. They thought why is our Guru Maharaj spending so much of time to this particular attached householder? He is so much attached to so many things. They went and told Ramanujacharya Why are you spending so much of time with him? So then Ramanujacharya said, okay, you go to tonight, you go to this house of this Dhanurdas, and then you take away the ornaments of the wife of Dhanurdas when she is sleeping and bring it to me. So one of the person went. So he went to take away the ornaments of the wife of Dhanurdas. So he took away. So she immediately understood that Ramanujacharya's sannyasi disciple has come. But then she did not want to get up. So she thought maybe our Guru Maharaj is in financial difficulties. So they have come to get the ornaments. So she voluntarily actually allowed that sannyasi to take away all the ornaments. So then she turned to the other side so that he can take away the other ornaments on her other side also. So as soon as she turned the other side, he actually came back. The sannyasi thought that she has woken up. So he immediately left the place. So after that, this wife of Dhanurdas narrated Dhanurdas the whole incident, that how the sannyasi came to take away the ornaments. Then I turned away, but then immediately the sannyasi left. So Dhanurdas chastised his wife, saying that, why did you turn so fast? You should have allowed the sannyasis to take away the ornaments on the other side also. See, you have done such a great disservice. So like that, he chastised his wife. When the sannyasis saw this incident, they were completely taken aback. But how Dhanurdas was such a, although he was a householder, he was so detached. On the other hand, when the sannyasis, like Ramanujacharya, arranged for their copins or their loincloths to be misplaced, so all the sannyasi disciples, they started like frantically looking for their loincloths. So they were attached to their loincloths. So basically the lesson is, point is that a detached householder is better than an attached renunciant. So that means like one can practice spirituality in any situation. One does not have to change one's situation. One has to simply change one's attitude. So then, in the 8th verse, Krishna is saying, Niyatam kuru karmatvam karma jayo hyakarmanaha sharira yatra pichate na prasidhye dakarmanaha. Krishna is saying that, so perform your prescribed duties without desire. Niyatam, necessary. You have to perform your prescribed duties without desire. Niyatam kuru karmatvam karma jayo hyakarmanaha. So this from 3rd verse to 8th verse, these verses hint at what is called as Nishkama Karma. To explain Nishkama Karma in simple words, Karma means activity. Nishkama means activity performed without desire. Without desire for sense gratification. So when you do not have desire for your own sense gratification, when you do not have a selfish desire, that means you have to have a higher knowledge. Unless you have knowledge, you cannot actually act without desire. So Nishkama Karma means action performed with knowledge and detachment. In simple words, Karma means activity, Nishkama means without desire. Without desire is possible only when you have knowledge. So Nishkama Karma means action performed with knowledge and detachment. So Krishna talked about the knowledge of the soul. Previously he says soul is active. And in this verse he says Niyatam Kuru Karmatvam. Perform your activity without desire. So the detachment is there. So verse number 3rd to 8th verse hint at what is called as Nishkama Karma. So then Krishna is saying, Sharira yatra pi chate na prasidye dakarmana. He says that, moreover, by renouncing your activities, you cannot even maintain your own body. Because even if you renounce, if a jnani who renounces, even he has to eat, he has to maintain his body. till he achieves perfection. So, but the jnani actually renunciant leads his life by begging. But you are a kshatriya, you cannot beg. But if you beg, what will happen? If you beg, when you are begging, somebody will give money, somebody will not give money. And when somebody does not give money, because you are nature of a kshatriya, so that nature will come out and you will start like attacking that person. So you are a kshatriya, so you cannot beg. Then how will you actually maintain your body? So then Krishna is saying, so better you maintain your body by doing your prescribed duties, by doing the duties of a kshatriya, by taking taxes, by protecting the citizens, etc. So in this way, Krishna hints at nishkama karma till verse number 8. So then Arjuna Arjuna may think, but then I have heard if you perform any activity, it will only bind a person to reaction. If you perform activity, it will only bind a person to reaction. So what is the solution? So Krishna is saying, so you perform your activities not for your pleasure. You perform your activities for the pleasure of Vishnu. Yajnartat karmano nyatra lokoyam karma bandhanah tadartam karma kaunteya muktasanga samachara. So Krishna is saying that you perform your work for the pleasure of God, for the pleasure of Vishnu. So here in the 9th verse, Krishna is actually giving the knowledge of the Supreme Lord, Vishnu. So because the addition of nishkama karma plus the knowledge of Vishnu, when you add both of them, what you get is nishkama karma yoga. So yoga means to connect with the Supreme. So till verse number 8, he talked about nishkama karma. And then in the 9th verse, he talked about knowledge of Lord Vishnu. So nishkama karma plus knowledge of Lord Vishnu is nishkama karma yoga. So then, so here it is interesting. Krishna is saying that, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction. So it actually, Vishnu is actually expansion of Krishna. Why Krishna is not saying that you perform your activities for me only? After all, Vishnu is not different from Krishna only. So because Krishna is acting in the role of a teacher, so Krishna is saying that, okay, perform your activities for his satisfaction. So then, in the 10th verse, he says, it's a little time. Krishna says that, Sahayagya praja srishtva puro vacha prajapatihi. So in this verse, Krishna is saying that, how if a person does not work for Vishnu, then what is wrong in that? He's saying that it is wrong to maintain one's body without actually working, offering the sacrifice to Vishnu. So Krishna is saying that, how he is telling us the point is that the Lord of the Prajapati is Vishnu. He only created all the demigods, human beings and the sacrifice. Since Lord Vishnu only has created everything, so it is natural that you should perform your activities for his satisfaction. And he created sacrifices, and after creating sacrifices, he said, be happy by the performance of sacrifice. When you perform sacrifice, you will get everything desirable in this life, and also you will get liberation. So then, and this Vishnu also said to the living entities, he said, you please the devatas, you please the demigods. And when you please the demigods by performing sacrifices, they will supply necessities to you and then they will actually please you. Because we are actually living in this world, we are actually taking so many resources from all the demigods. Like even the air we breathe, it is actually coming from particular demigod is in charge of the air. So if you do not, like when you are enjoying something for which you are not the proprietor, And if you do not offer that to that particular demigod, then you are simply called a thief. That's what Krishna is saying, that actually the demigods are giving everything. So if you do not perform sacrifices by giving back to the demigods, then you are nothing but a thief. And when you perform sacrifices to the demigods, and they will satisfy you, and then in this way you will actually, both of them you will get prosperity. And then Krishna clarifies further. Krishna is saying that so then Arjuna may say that I don't need to perform sacrifice. I don't need these demigods and opulent necessities, because nor must I need to perform sacrifices, because I am going to forest only. I am going to be renunciant. I am going to forest. So I am going to lead my life by begging. So when I am going to lead my life by begging, so I am not going to take anything from the demigods. So then I don't need to perform sacrifices. So because of that, not only I won't be a thief, but also I won't take part in this warfare. So then Krishna is saying that even if you go to the forest, you have to eat something. So in order to eat, you have to get food. But then when you are eating some food, you will get some reaction, because every living entity, food is actually will be another living entity. If you give trouble to another living entity, you will get reaction. So in order to avoid reaction, you have to offer the food to God. So when we give trouble to another living entity, we will get actually sinful reaction further. So even if you eat vegetable food, you will get sinful reaction. But when you offer the food to Krishna, then there will not be any sinful reaction, because Krishna actually consumes all the sin. On the other hand, those vegetables which are offered to Krishna, they will get at least human life in the next life. So I will just take 5 minutes more and stop. So then Krishna is saying, so you have to, even if you go to the forest, you have to eat food. For that you have to perform sacrifice, you have to offer the food to Vishnu. So then the next question is, so then how to get food? So Krishna is saying in the today's verse that food grains, how do they come? Annad bhavanti bhutani. That means living entities subsist on food grains. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, one may say, no, I am a non-vegetarian. So I don't subsist on food grains, one may say. But then even if you are a non-vegetarian, those animals, they subsist on vegetables only. So whether you are a vegetarian or non-vegetarian, you subsist on food grains. So then how do you get food grains? Parjanyad anna sambhava. Food grains will come only when rains come. And how will the rains come? Yajnyad bhavati parjanyo. Rains will come when the demigods are pleased. So demigods are pleased only when the rains will come. Like recently, few years back in Bangalore, scientists performed some experiment in order to get some artificial rains. They spent crores of rupees, and then they got like few liters of rainwater. It is actually ridiculous. So the easiest way to get rains is you have to perform sacrifice. You cannot get rains by your scientific advancement. With your nuts and bolts, you have to perform sacrifice. So then, this sacrifice is born of prescribed duties. Yajna karma samudbhavah. So here, so Prabhupada writes an interesting point in the purport. He says that these food grains are actually prasadam offered to Krishna. It has got two effects. One is the prophylactic effect, and another is the antiseptic effect. Like when you buy medicines, like there are certain medicines, like they have a prophylactic nature, like in order so that you don't get malaria, you have to take 2 tablets of chloroquine. That has a prophylactic effect for 1 week. Especially many people who come from abroad, they come to India, they come with the prophylactic dose of malaria tablets for 3 months. So they keep taking every month. That's a prophylactic nature. And then when you actually get a disease, then you have to take antibiotics or you have to take full course. That is like antibiotic. So prasadam is so powerful that it acts as a prophylactic medicine and also as an antiseptic medicine. Prophylactic means like because of taking prasadam, you will become immune to all future sinful activities. And also, you will be actually relieved of all the past sinful activities also. So, that is the nature of prasadam. So, then, this karma brahmodbhavam viddhi. So, the regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas. And Vedas are born of the, manifested from the Supreme Lord. Supreme Lord, Vedas are born from the breathing of the Supreme Lord. Again, Prabhupada says that. Because God is actually omnipotent. The power of God is that Krishna can perform like any activity with his any sense. Like through his breathing, he can create Vedas. Just by glancing at a food, he can eat the food. So that is the power of Krishna. So then, here, I just want to make 2 points and stop it. Like, here, Prabhupada is making an interesting point. Here, although actually in the purport, Prabhupada says that even those who have not followed the Vedic injunctions may adopt the principles of Krishna consciousness. So, Prabhupada is actually directly telling the persons, you should actually take to Krishna consciousness. Sometimes people may perform sacrifices to please the demigods, but then they may never, ultimately the purpose of all sacrifices is to take to Krishna consciousness, to surrender to God. One may forget to surrender to God. Even if you perform sacrifice, but if you do not take to Krishna consciousness, it is actually not of much use. So actually, Krishna consciousness is not mentioned in the verse, or in the translation in the verses. But still Krishna, Prabhupada is talking about Krishna consciousness. Like sometimes, like many people, they actually criticize Srila Prabhupada's commentary by saying that, so in this verse, like here, Krishna is not mentioned only. Devotional service is not mentioned. Why are you talking about devotional service? Like one devotee was giving the example. Like just like in cricket, like suppose a batsman is playing and the bowler bowls, like when the ball actually hits the pad or the leg, so all the 10 players appeal for leg before wicket. Just like, how is that? They appeal for the leg before wicket. But when the umpire does not, is having a doubt whether the ball hit the bat first and then did it hit the pad, or whether it hit the pad first or did it hit the bat, he may be in doubt. But the batsman may be saying that, okay, no, actually it's bat, it did not actually hit my leg. He may say like that. So when the umpire is in doubt, he will actually give the benefit of doubt to the batsman. Although so many people may be appealing for lead before wicket. So similarly, so many scholars, they may criticize Srila Prabhupada's commentary that why, where there is no Krishna is mentioned, why are you mentioning Krishna? But we can see the life of Srila Prabhupada. He actually led a life dedicated for Krishna consciousness. So should we put our faith on so many scholars who write commentaries on Gita, but they never lead a life dedicated to Krishna? Or should we put our faith in a person who actually dedicated his life for the service of Krishna? So similarly, although sometimes Krishna consciousness is not directly mentioned in a verse, when Prabhupada tells that you should surrender to Krishna, you should actually put faith in Prabhupada's words. So lastly, so when we actually, every person is trying to serve so many people in this world. People serve so many masters. Like when I was working, studying in the college, in the campus interview, like some companies came, like they would advertise in their campus, interviews, they would say that our motto is, they would say that our strength is the people. We actually value the employees. And then they would say that we offer employee stock options if you join our company, so many options, etc. So better you join our company, like that they say. But then as soon as the recession comes, then immediately they kick off the employees. So this is the nature of mundane bosses. But on the other hand, what is the nature of Krishna? It is explained nicely in the 10th canto. When Krishna was kidnapping Rukmini, Rukmini was about to be married to Shishupal. So when Rukmini was about to be married, so Krishna comes to that particular place and Krishna actually kidnaps Rukmini. So when Krishna kidnaps Rukmini, there are so many soldiers and kings who are assembled on the other side. They were actually waiting for an instance to get darshan of Rukmini. So then, they immediately, as soon as Krishna kidnapped Rukmini, all the kings, they start attacking Lord Krishna with their big armies. So that time, Rukmini becomes very much in distress. So how is it that at last moment Krishna kidnapped, and then now Krishna is going to be attacked by so many people. So what will happen to him? Krishna becomes, Rukmini is in so much in distress. So that time Shukadeva Goswami says, Prahasyam Bhagavan Aha Masma Bahir Vamalochane Vinakshyant Adunaitvaitat Tavakai Shatratvam Balam. So that time Krishna smiles at Rukmini and then Krishna says, O lotus-eyed one, do not be afraid. This, your army will actually destroy all these armies of these other kings within a matter of few seconds. Do not be afraid. Your army will destroy. So here it is interesting that Krishna is saying that your army will destroy. So here, for the very first time, actually Krishna meets Rukmini in her life. So Krishna met Rukmini just few seconds before. But then Krishna is saying that my army actually belongs to you. Your army will destroy all the kings. So this is the nature of Lord Krishna, that although Rukmini just developed her relation with Krishna just few seconds after, Krishna is actually ready to share all his opulences with Rukmini. But on the other hand, the mundane bosses, even if you work for 20 years, when the recession comes, they just kick off the employees. So that is the nature of mundane bosses, although they may promise employee stock options, etc. So which one do you want to serve, Lord Krishna, or do you want to serve mundane bosses? So that is what the purpose is. I'm sorry to go ahead, actually, ahead of 10 minutes. If somebody has any question, we'll take it personally. So otherwise, we'll stop it. We'll take it personally. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.